Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Sean Pepper Podcast. On this podcast, I seek out and speak with growth-minded humans like yourselves. My job here is to connect with experts from a variety of fields and disciplines to explore how we develop ourselves and others in today's dynamic environments. I aim to provide you with digestible and actionable information you can use in your professional and personal life while exploring what it means to be human, at work, at home, and online. If this episode or podcast is meaningful to you, please consider sharing with others or letting me know on Twitter or Instagram at Sean_Pepper. And as always, thank you for listening.
Welcome to Sean's Podcast.
Today on the podcast, we have Christine Ho Younghusband. She's an assistant professor and the B.Ed. Coordinator at the University of Northern British Columbia. She was a math teacher and a school trustee, and in fact was my math teacher, and I'm so happy to have her on the podcast today. I have to add a caveat in here. That is, you will hear me agreeing and nodding and saying yes as part of this conversation. Me and Christine fundamentally agree on so many things when it comes to education and values and beliefs. And so I apologize to the listeners. You're going to hear a lot of yes and uh-huh and oh, totally agree. And I tried to edit that out, but unfortunately it wasn't that easy to do that. So I appreciate all of your forgiveness for my interjecting between the wonderful thoughts that Christine had to share with us. Without further ado, I hope you enjoy this audio journey with Christine Ho Younghusband. Christine, so tell us a little bit about your journey thus far in your career and what led you to becoming a B.Ed. coordinator at the University of Northern British Columbia.
I was a math teacher on the Sunshine Coast in British Columbia, your math teacher, which has been really incredible, which sort of set the platform and really my trajectory and my mission and purpose in, I will say, in my career. And I almost want to say my life, which is really trying to improve the learning experiences of students. And that's really the underpinning of everything I'm doing. And if I reflect back, I've been a math teacher. I left teaching, pursued my doctorate, and became a school trustee because I couldn't let go of public education. Really transformed my perspective about systems and leadership, and really helped me complete my research, really, which is ironic, which is about math teaching, surprise. Anyway, then moved into teaching at the University of Northern British Columbia, where I teach people to become teachers. And right now we're just at the end of our practicum. You remember that? Oh, Sean, practicum. This is short practicum.
Yeah. I was just talking to somebody 2 days ago about my practicum experience. It wasn't the greatest, to be honest. Practicums are so funny. I had a really bad experience for my 2 week. And sometimes in those practicums, maybe we could talk about that a bit, but you're going into somebody else's territory, right? So you're going to somebody else's classroom. Even though you would like it to be the time to develop your own pedagogical, you know, idea and philosophy of teaching, you have lots of time to do that after. And so I sometimes feel that conflict, it can be challenging. And so sometimes the fit between the person that you get on practicum and teaching philosophies will butt heads. And that happened. And then the second practicum was amazing.
Yeah, no, it's funny that you say that. First of all, I say in education generally is a crapshoot.
Yeah.
You know, like, and yeah. It really is a chance experience. Sometimes you connect with your teacher, sometimes you don't. And that's just the way it is, whether if it's right or wrong, differences, et cetera. I think that it really gets to the underpinning of what education is about, which is about relationships and connection.
Of course.
And yes. And so we're always looking for that. And sometimes it's not perfect. But what you're saying is exactly validating what we're trying to achieve at UNDC. And because we're a smaller program, we can have a bit more of a personal touch. And again, that itself has pros and cons. But it's generally going well. And in the end, we're trying to support their learning. And so how do we... My mindset is not that we're trying to train teachers, that we're trying to encourage our teacher candidates to become learners, you know, and to understand learning. And so when they go into their classrooms, how do they create those learning experiences for their students? So I've been part of the BC's curriculum and part of developing that.
Yep.
We redesigned the M.Ed. and B.Ed. programs at UNBC. I don't know how I sort of serendipitously trip into these moments, but I think it's super exciting to be in. Honestly, I think it's been gifts. It's something that I've been wanting is to be part of, I don't like to use educational reform because that sounds really serious, but I do like the idea of transformation and
yes.
that students are at the heart of what we do. And when I think about BC's curriculum or UNBC with our programming is that how do we create structures so that we can mm-hmm. create those learning experiences for our students and learners?
You said something really interesting about this idea of trans. I think that's probably why I've connected with you as one of my former teachers is this idea of transforming. And but yet you're very playful. How do you manage this serious? No, honestly, though, because that's one of the reasons.
Do you really perceive me as playful?
I do perceive you as slightly sarcastic, playful. You know, I appreciate that because honestly, a lot of times what I find is people move in these positions and everybody drops what I think is like the shared humanity, right? Everybody compartmentalizes into these roles. Now I'm this person and they bring that person forward. And that's important because you need to be competent and skillful, but also you need to be yourself. And people are ultimately wanting to not only connect with somebody who's professional and can get their job done, they want to connect with a human being, especially in something like education. How do you go about doing that while still being able to make the transformation? Because I imagine if you're trying to transform things, you can't just force things. You have to actually get a collaborative, collective group of people together to then change everybody's mind and then agree on moving forward. And so how do you go about using your personality and building relationships to be able to make those transformations?
Yeah, that could take the hour.
That's okay. Yeah, that's totally okay. My whole goal with the podcast is for people to explore humanity. And so this idea that we try to pump up our egos in certain roles or certain ways, and I want to understand better how we can remain human but still get these tasks done. And so our work doesn't have to become so heavy. It can be light and playful.
Yeah, no, you're asking a great question. And honestly, as I listen to you ask that question, I think, oh my gosh, this is serendipity. Could the timing be any more perfect to be posing that question to self? Because honestly, the work that we're doing is serious. And the impact that educators have on people's lives is enormous. And I will honestly tell you, I didn't realize that until I left teaching. That's the irony, isn't it? You know, and thinking about transformation and the work that brings, that I would say brings me fulfillment, but makes me feel aligned, I couldn't achieve in the system because I always felt that I was at risk or the system's too big, at least in the role that I was in, which is a classroom teacher. And I'm not saying that classroom teachers are not powerful. In fact, they have the most power because I miss that 100%.
Yeah.
Working with people like you, like we're still connected because of our connection in a math class.
Yes.
Like that to me shows me the impact of my work.
Of course.
This is right here, right now. And so that part I think is interesting. I also think that it's an ongoing struggle. What you're tapping on is my struggle because I want to have voice. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say things that are disruptive.
Mm-hmm.
I am scared. Shitless. Let's just be frank.
Yeah.
You know, because you're putting yourself on the line.
Yeah, all the time.
And this is where it's so important to understand our why. If the why is all about, I want to get promoted, or I want to get hired, or I want to get a raise, or I want to keep my job, or if that is why, we will always, I'll say with air quotes, be stuck. Because that's not compelling. And really, I wrestle with this, is if I don't say this now, and my why is to improve student learning and their experiences, then if whatever it is continues, I have to take ownership of that.
That's right. Yeah. There's a really interesting, and I think as people get into positions of leadership, it becomes so hard because the relationship has to be there in order to create motivation. And if you obviously want the change to happen faster than it does, and you can see it for that person, but you can't do it for that person. That thing is really difficult. You're right in that if you're not doing something about it now, then it's not going to change. And therefore you are the one to blame because you didn't push that forward.
Yeah. And not even that it to change, but even a chance to change. Hands.
Yes.
And you know, that's where my mindset is right now. And I will say that was probably, it's an ongoing struggle. And I think there's moments of struggle like that. I for actually sure. have to ask myself that question. Put myself on the line, or I'll just stay the status quo.
I agree. I think there's some practices that we can put into place. So things like human-centered design thinking, these design thinking types of styles that really ease the conflict in the room. Like, for instance, sticky note sessions where, you know, people agree with by placing sticky notes. I know that's like Silicon Valley woo-woo, but it does really help create this thing that this isn't my idea. This is like an idea, not my idea, but an idea. And we should consider the idea and not who it's coming from, but the idea at face value. And I think sometimes that's really hard for people to separate from, because maybe somebody doesn't like somebody. And especially in the world that we're living in right now, when you look at US politics, you see these very much like, we're not looking at an idea that somebody's proposing. We're looking at, are you Republican? Are you Democrat? That is really important. We try to look at an idea objectively, no matter who it's coming from.
Yeah. And I think that, but it goes back down. I want to tap into some ideas that you just mentioned about leadership and relationships. Yeah. And really it's about respect. It's about respect and kindness and compassion, like those virtues that come in with leadership. And honestly, I'm going to say this. If I put myself in the hierarchical, you're welcome. And it's on the podcast.
That's perfect.
It's about as
That was great. Loved it.
You tell it's not in my vocab.
Which is, it shouldn't be, right? Yeah, I agree.
But in that framework, I mean, I'm small. I'm near the bottom. Yeah. But and I say that not out of knowing my place, but I say that in terms of the framework that I'm operating in. And that would be true for K-12. That would be maybe possibly true when I was in, you know, the governance world and as an elected official, and also where I am in higher education. You know, but when I take leadership, and my doctorate was in leadership, and I took that degree really with that interest of what is leadership, because I always question it all the time. And it's not, I say maybe early on, maybe judging, but on the other hand, what about the doing? What's the actionable that ties into that? But honestly, leadership to me, the leadership that I take, the leadership that I own and hold is, I believe that we're all leaders. I believe that we have a responsibility. And the framework that I really truly operate in is not a vertical one, but a horizontal one, a flattened one. So if you're the dean, I'm going to say dean or school principal or you know, superintendent or the president of the university, I think we all have roles and responsibilities. Mm-hmm. And it's my job as a educational leader to connect with these people, to inform decision-making, to influence where I can. And not in terms of, we'll say, I was going to say advocacy, but it's more of a, if they don't know, they can't do anything about it.
That's right.
If they don't
awareness.
Know.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, totally. Awareness and connection again. And really, so some of the components that you in your initial big lengthy question, I think part of how to be playful in it as well. Number one is I have to be listening. Joining the university, I pretty much spent the first 2 years really trying to listen and understand and wonder why are things the way they are? Who are these people? What are their motivations? And not to make a slide deck, but I'm going to tell you, I've learned a lot of my leadership skills from curling. I'm going to throw that out there.
I do remember that you were a curler. I know.
And as a skip, you have to watch people and you're watching how things are unfolding. You're watching the game and there's a strategy and certainly there's rules to the game. Just like there's rules in the university and rules in K-12 and this policy is already set. So I'm not going to be completely rogue to the rules of the game. For example, like I'm going to take this rock from another ice and put it into my game. Like, that doesn't make any sense to me. So there's those components, there's limitations of what we can and cannot do. But definitely listening and watching and observing, I think is really important, because I think that if we don't really understand what we're looking at, it's hard to take action on how it could be better or different, et cetera, or transform. That's one part. The other part is to have, as you mentioned, these tough conversations. You know, you say sticky notes because it's actually a safe way
That's
to
true.
Have a tough conversation.
Absolutely,
But really,
it's a low,
But it is still about, do you have enough social capital and connection and relationships and respect from the people that you're working with to have those tough conversations?
Yes.
With, and that they're going to say something that may not make me happy. And this is where our egos really got to stand aside sometimes.
Of course.
You know, our egos are always there. Like, just take a moment to have a coffee break or something as we're having these tough conversations. And honestly, the groups, I feel really privileged to be working with, such as BC Ed Chat on Twitter, the moderating.
Yes, I try to join as much as I can. And I've always, I feel, I'm not going to lie, I feel overwhelmed because there's so many good ideas and there's just so much to dive into. It's almost becomes a where do I place my attention? Because you're like, oh, but and then, right? Like it just becomes, yeah, it's just, yeah, there's so much. And
self-regulation skills.
That's a yes, absolutely.
Pick one thread.
Exactly, right.
But the moderation team, a diverse group of educators in BC who hold different roles in BC education, and we can sit and have really tough conversations and support each other in that way. I think it's incredible. Same thing. I'm going to mark all these BC areas.
That's great because I think BC Ed Chat, it's a wonderful resource, especially for educators. Sometimes you can feel pretty isolated in your own classroom. And if you're not familiar with Twitter, then I just had Dave Truss on the podcast and he's got a book on Twitter Edu that I think might be meaningful. But yeah, Twitter is a wonderful tool for educators. So you should definitely try to build your PLN.
Totally. And I 100% built my community from there, because sometimes when you feel like you're by yourself or you feel like you're doing something that's totally different from the crowd, there are other people there who are right there standing beside you. You can't see them yet. Anyway, and the other group, you know, BCAMT, so the BC Association of Math Teachers, again, incredible a community that I was a part of for many years and kept in contact with them. The tough conversations we're having about mathematics and math education and what's good for students and how do we get there and supporting teachers in their learning to get, I think is amazing. And then again, the community I've also been with at UNBC as we're creating and redesigning the B.Ed and M.Ed programs.
Yeah.
You actually have to be really, and I say critical in a good way, you have to really look at selves to see what's working and what's not working. So to get to these tough conversations, you really have to have that community to do that. So you're listening, you have community, and then also is understanding where we can go next. And so I think that I do take a bit of risk taking, and I've had tough conversations where, like I said, we're in practicum. I'm having some tough conversations with some candidates. Yeah. But really it comes from a mindset of learning. This is not a judgment. This is how can we meet expectations? How can we meet these standards so that you can be that educator for your students? Right. And we have to keep modeling that. And what brings me joy and what makes me happy really is staying in my alignment, staying with my purpose. And part of that is about having voice. And part of that is extending myself. And part of that sometimes makes me feel like I am taking risks, but when I do and things shift, and honestly, my headspace is not about, oh, I made that shift.
No, like, totally. That's
it. Yeah. I don't care. Did it shift?
Yeah.
Did it shift? Yes. Please.
It shifted. Great.
You know, how can we make this better, you know, for the learners that are in front of us? Because if we really want to have staying power impact, we have to stay focused on that. And honest in it. And I will tell you, it's worked in my favor and hasn't worked in my favor. And I think
that, yes, and me as well. I can attest to that. Yes.
I think that it is to celebrate the ones that are working. And if it's not working, then that's not the direction.
I completely agree. I think is really important in teaching as well. I mean, if you're not teaching in an environment that you like, you do have choice. And sometimes when I speak with educators, they don't feel like they have choice. And part of my thought process is that they don't have choice because sometimes it's fear, but sometimes it's that this higher sense of maybe direction of what they want to do or what they want to accomplish. And without that, sometimes I find it can be really hard for them to get through a tough year. Sometimes you get a tough year, like your class cohort is tough. And if you don't have that North Star, or this sort of these value systems in place where you can start to make decisions that are hard decisions quickly, it can really affect your joy of going to work every day.
Yeah.
I think we're seeing teacher burnout at a higher rate than ever. And that's why I asked the tough conversation. I think teachers are struggling to make sense of the new kind of, the growing environment as it's evolving and changing. There's many teachers that I know that go home and barely see their family because they then produce an award-winning lesson plan every day. and they feel like that's what they needed to do. And there is a balance somewhere in between that. I don't know how teachers are rectifying that, because everybody wants to change the world. I don't think people go into education thinking, oh my God, I'm going to get a great paycheck. And I think value system wise, people are going into education because they want to make a change and want to do what's best for students, hopefully.
Make a difference. And no one enters in education thinking that they're going to hurt students. No one. And so no one has that intention. Right.
Yes.
But I think that part of the burnout, and I will speak for myself. I'll use my single data point and make a broad pan generalization.
That's okay. That's all I do. That's why I have to have a podcast, because then I can get other people's perspectives.
But for burnout for myself, and I think that one thing talking with teacher candidates right now is like, oh, it's really stressful, it's a lot of work. I said that's the profession, that's the that's what you're going into. This is not a practicum thing, this is a profession thing. And I'm sure that we all educators out there really struggle with that idea about balance and self-care and quality learning and teaching experiences, etc. Mm-hmm. But I think part of the burnout for me isn't the award-winning lesson plan. I don't think it's the connection with their students. I don't think that. And again, I'm generalizing. I think that if anything, what's keeping our candidates in the game is practicum, and they're with students, of course, in a socially distanced way, but they're with students like in a safe way. But it's the connection keeps us in the game. That's what keeps educators
the relationships.
It's the connection. And I will tell you, that was heartbreaking for me when I left K-12, because I cried for years after I left education, K-12, because of the connections I was missing and the connections that I had. Yeah. And that's not just with students, but it's also with my colleagues as well. But the big thing is where burnout comes from is that when we're not operating with what we know is the right thing to do.
That's what I was trying to get back to, is this idea of without having that North Star or that value system, then we all have it. I think people think that they don't have a North Star, but we do. We have an operating system of things that we think are right and things that we think are wrong. And sometimes if the way that we're doing something and we don't feel like we have a voice to at least share our opinion about that, I think people can really get burnt out, because it becomes, I'm doing something that I don't agree with, right? Every day I'm showing up and doing something that I fundamentally am not aligned with. So.
Yeah. And the other part is, if I'm looking at the system and I'm thinking what kind of change from my locus of control, I'll say it that way.
Yes. Perfect. Great. Yeah. That's a perfect way of putting it.
Is one thing that I think we forget is that we do have agency. Mm-hmm. We do have agency. We need to take it. We wrestle with that in our system, because it's either you're the agent or you're compliant. Mm-hmm. And I would say the battle between the two ideologies, if you will, can wear someone down. Because if you become the agent, if you're saying a message that might be different from what you're receiving or what is happening, you feel like you're taking a big risk.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a feeling. I'm not saying that's right to their own opinions. And I think it's what I learned in my school trustee work is, if I don't have my voice, as I mentioned before, then either I stay quiet and accept what's happening, or know that there is a consequence if I'm not saying something. Like, so it's my duty to say something. As a school trustee, it was my duty to have voice. And I think that we should expect that from not just our educators, but from our learners too. So
yes, of course.
But the problem is, one of the problems is that we are looking at, and I'm going to say it, we still are operating like a big machine.
Yes.
Like a big machine.
Absolutely. Yes.
And it
very is. Systemically, like we're all computers. This is also another reason I started the podcast. I'm actually very fearful of this idea that technology is now driving, like, because we can, we should. Like, that's my fundamental way that I'm looking at things right now through technology. Because we can send an email all the time, then we should send an email. Because it's more efficient to send an email, then we should send an email. And it's just because we can with technology doesn't mean we should. And we're the humans. Like, what technology is technology, and we can say no to things. Like, for instance, people send emails, I don't reply within 24 hours. In fact, if you do it on my website, it says, I'm going to get back to you within 72 hours with my team, because I want you to know, hey, I'm trying my best. But some days, my podcast went from going from every week to dropping off for 2 months. And that happened because I had a daughter. And I could think about me, myself being a machine. Oh, my podcast schedule needs to be like this. And I'm a computer and the algorithm says this. But we're human beings. We're not computers. And so we need to recognize that. And so this is what was going through my mind when I started the podcast. And this is a theme that I'm trying to uncover in these conversations.
And I think there's systems, anytime you're dealing with more than one person, there's going to be systems and there's going to be politics. And
of course,
it does get complicated. But I think if anything, what I hoped that is part of the transformation that I'm trying to create from where I am. You like that? I like those, all those disclaimers. is we operate, the system operates in a state of fear all the time.
Yes.
And when you're always scared, then you're always taking everything from scarcity. I'm going to take all the whiteboard pens. I'm going to, I'm going to have all the matching chairs.
Totally.
I'm going to, whatever it is. Yes. I'm just saying
the scarcity mindset versus abundance. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
And I just think that what I hope for our teacher candidates and what we try to create is always trying to create space, to ask and work with coaching teachers and saying, just give them some space to try out. And they're going to use their professional judgment if that candidate is ready or not. And I respect that. And I respect that. But we ask for those space. And we ask our teacher candidates to take risks because I want them, going back to our right at the beginning of our podcast, that practicum experience for them to really understand the early beginnings of the formation of their pedagogical stance.
Of course.
We are guests and I want our students to walk into these classrooms with gratitude that we are being invited because they don't have to take us.
Yeah, and sorry, not to cut you off, but I used to say thank you to the students every time I left the classroom. And that was something that I learned at my first school, actually, at Island Pacific School. One of the fundamental things was that you thank the student before, thank you for class, and then you dismiss the students. And I think that's true. You are being thankful for them because if they're not there, then you're not building that relationship. And if that was your driving force of getting into teaching, then hopefully you can create an environment where they feel safe enough to say, I'm not going to hand this in today because these are the reasons. And that's not them saying, oh, here's a systematic thing. It was due on this date. So now you're getting docked 10%. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not human. That's not how human beings operate.
And isn't it funny? It's very subtle. If you're watching from like a television with no sound, I'm going to say like, it looks the same.
Yeah.
You know, it looks the same, but it's true. We have to get reconnected with the human side of what we do in the work that we do and know that it's not always going to be the same. It's not equal. Not all students get the same treatment, but we all have the same standards. We all have the same criteria. We all have the same expectations. And so our work, this is the shift in thinking. Our work is to try to ensure that you meet those expectations. And we have to model it in the teacher education program, but guess what? We have to model that in K-12. And so how do we give ourselves that agency and autonomy to get to that level of, I will say, professionalism for our teachers and people? And not to say it's not void. Our system is not void of that.
No.
I was just listening to another, it wasn't on Instagram. I don't know if it was a podcast. It was just definitely entertaining. But I watched, and I'm going to say her name, Shelley Moore and her wife. And they were doing a book club. And I think about out of the whole hour, I think 40 minutes was the update of how they're doing. And then 20 minutes for the book club. But of that 40 minutes, I was really enjoying listening to them. And I thought, you know, why do people have to leave the system to have a voice?
Yeah.
I wonder about that because, and she's certainly still partners. And this is true for a lot. George Kuros, the same thing.
Yep. Yes. Yeah. And, yeah. I follow both of them. Yeah.
I bring up just people like that because there's some really, there's some people still in the system, not still, I don't want to use the word still because that sounds negative. There's some real change agents that I'm seeing, I'm watching. I love watching Jordan Tinney, superintendent of Surrey.
Surrey, yeah.
Love watching the superintendent of Vancouver and West Vancouver. And there are some people out there, you know, Chris Reger from Langley, principal. There's people who really can see this. And I'll tell you back to that assignment thing. What really is making that impact is that people can see that they care about what people, the students that they're serving and the humanity that sits behind it.
And that's a very interesting distinction in word use, right? Serving. We are serving our students.
We are in service to them.
That's
we wouldn't be there if they weren't there.
Yes.
That's the truth. Yeah. Like, our purpose would not be there.
For sure.
And so I think what sort of resonates with me with people in the field and people I want to stay connected to are people who have a high level of integrity.
Yeah. You know,
the people who are willing to be honest with their thoughts and their thinking and about me. I'm open to feedback. You got to be open to feedback too. But you can't just give it. You got to take it as well.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm just so enamored by people. I use the word creativity because that's a common word. But my favorite thing, like, we all have our our thing. You know, I don't know how to say.
Yeah.
My jam.
Yeah, that's my jam. Yeah.
You know. Yeah. You know what my favorite jam is? Not strawberry or really. I don't actually like jam, to be truthful, in the concrete sense. But my favorite thing is watching other people's jam.
Yeah,
that's
true. It's actually,
witnessing their jam. Yeah. I love going to Circle Craft. Mm-hmm. I am making these dog biscuits, organic something. I'm listening to their story. I buy the dog biscuit. Yeah. I'm not buying the biscuit. I'm buying your story.
The narrative, yeah.
Because they're what? I make these hand-painted silk scarves, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, and I'm thinking to myself, like, why? You know? But then I'm so drawn to their drive and their passion and their the intrinsic good, that they're exuding as they're talking about their about their jam.
Yeah.
And so I love going to Pro D. I love listening. And yes, I'm learning, but I'm so drawn to people's jam.
Yeah.
And so
I think there's something that you notice when somebody's in their flow state where they're comfortable and they're truly engaged and the world could fall away to the side and they would still be doing that.
Right. And,
there's something so authentic and raw about it as well.
And so when I think about that in the jam and my alignment and purpose and why and how do we keep foraging forward in a joyful way, I want that for students.
Yeah.
And I think BC's curriculum is aligned to that thinking. How do we personalize learning so that they can find their jam?
Yeah, for sure. How do you see the change in creating teacher candidate space? Like, what's the biggest shift? So a lot of people are going to listen to this podcast from a range of professions and disciplines. And how do you see the shift between when you are in teacher education and to what you're trying to instill today? And what is the biggest kind of takeaways from that?
Yeah, I'll say a few things. One thing I'll say about my teacher education program. Yes, I got through. Yes, I got probably better grades than I thought I would. So, and also my practicum experience was I met some really good people. And, and ironically, I think we're a people industry that's how I got my first job, because the person I was commuting in with, who was friends with my teacher sponsor, knew the principal of the school that was hiring.
Yes.
So that's it. That's how I got through the door. And it was like, I had no idea. But I was just looking back at me as a candidate and being in that classroom, I was so concerned about how I looked and how I was being judged. And I was worried about if I was meeting the targets, if you will. Yeah. And I was high anxiety.
You're constantly that, like, this is a career that you want to do. And so this 1 year will determine whether or not your whatever you wanted to do in your career path is going to be there or not. And I think,
And so when I see, and I can't speak for all teacher eds, and I think all teacher eds always come with this, I will say, a similar mindset. We're all trying to create these programs that are best suited for the students in front of us and then therefore the students in front of them. From where I am at UNBC and with the redesign and what we're trying to create, especially with practicum, it's back to those, what we've just been talking about, is that I have to be honest with them. I have to stick with a high level of integrity, that we have standards that we're going to try to meet, and I really encourage creativity. And you can't have all those things without the relationship. Right. Do I wish the relationship was better because I'm doing remote learning?
Yes, of course.
Yeah, and they get done with remote learning because I know I get zoomed out too. And so now I'm trying to connect up with them asynchronously, which is also weird, really challenging. But
because you're in somebody's living room, you're not in a shared space. Like, it's like now you're all of a sudden in somebody's home.
Yeah.
Like we are right now.
Totally. And you miss out on the nuances. You miss out on the little things, you know, like if when you go to a conference, it's not the conference that was the best part. It was me bumping into in the hallway and we had a chat. You know, it's those little things that I'm missing out on right now. And I'm trying to make the best of it. I think that we all are too, generally. But the big shift for me is really mindset.
Yeah.
Mindset. And I know we can talk about growth mindset, et cetera.
Yes, of course.
But I think in that sort of way of thinking is how I want people to believe and feel. And this is the one thing I'm learning now in higher ed. And I think that I was doing it probably in K-12, but maybe not so explicitly. I'm really learning this, like, how are you leaving people in terms of how they feel?
Yeah.
Because in anything, that's what they're going to remember.
Social emotional side. And yeah, that's the most important part. I think that maybe was tucked away before, but that really changes everything. It does, honestly, like how you're feeling and also being able to express how you're feeling. I'm not a psychologist by any means, but there is lots of evidence to support the mental health crisis that we're facing with teens and young people. And we experience that as a challenge as teenagers, but I don't think we experience that to the level that students and teenagers are experiencing that now. Also, people are fearful of getting too open. And what I mean by that is, you know, that relationship thing, the boundary between teacher and student. I've talked to people about this, trying to be there and be supportive, but not get too much into something where you create this like emotional kind of dependency, if that makes sense.
Well, yeah, it's so interesting because the way we've been trying to design, and really I'll say design, which infers intentionality.
That's right. And I love design. Yeah.
And how we're designing the BEd program is, and particularly with practicum, is those relationships, is to be vulnerable, to be able to share those things. And so we have two sets of triads. One triad is the formal triad, which is the university, we call them practice evaluators.
Yep.
And then we have the teacher candidate, which is the student teacher. And then we also have the coaching teacher, which is the teacher sponsor. And we try to create that relationship so that they're in a little hub. And certainly I take on a role of BEd coordinator. So I'm outside of that triad, really trying to support their work. So if they have questions, if they have concerns, all three of them should know I have their back.
Yeah.
Three of them should know that. So everything I hear is feedback. And so we can get into those tough conversations, looping back in. We can get into those tough conversations because they know I have their back. They're not left alone to handle it. I am here to help facilitate or be the bad guy. It doesn't matter. Like whatever is going to help that teacher candidate to meet expectations, let's do it. That's where my attitude is with that. They also have an informal triad, which is a triad within the teacher candidates. And so they, so we design that as a framework, as part of their learning experience, so that they can have practice standard two, how to be a professional, a practice, also have those conversations of sharing and also maybe that shoulder to lean on. Because if we don't have those one or two or three people that we can lean on in confidence to be super vulnerable, that's where, back to teacher burnout, that's where we burn out again.
That's, I completely agree. I couldn't agree more. And I think that's so important that you guys are developing frameworks and ways to design and think about it. And that's actually one of the frustrations that I've had. I stumbled into design because I became a design teacher in IB. I had a master's degree in educational technology. They wanted to do some sort of digital design. And I said, I can do that because I've always played with digital design. I love digital design. But when I got into the design thinking aspect of it, I was always fascinated by the ability to use these sort of strategies to create things that meet the needs or the stakeholders of that specific community. I think a lot of the times we take these large kind of frameworks and we can place them into all these different areas and they're not necessarily going to work. And so what needs to happen is, like you said, we need to think about ways that we can design our own learning community based on a North Star set of principles. Your principle is the social emotional learning. That's going to be your North Star. Now, other things are going to be in there, but we're going to design from the perspective that we want to make sure that teachers don't burn out. And that's our starting point. And now how do we do that? And I find that so meaningful to hear from you that's happening, because I don't know that was happening 10 years ago. I don't know that there was intentionality. I think there might've been like, they do it this way, we do it this way, we do it that way. And I don't know that there was much thinking about how to design, like design as opposed to how do we meet the standards. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I think that's, it's the shift, I think, and it takes some of the, I will say the goodness from BC's curriculum. One is personalized learning, like that. And this is, this is one of those tough conversations that I'm having. Not everyone has the same learning experience in practicum. Yeah. So we can't treat and serve and support all candidates the same way.
Yeah.
That's a big idea at the university. So I'm just going to put that out there. But that's what K-12 in BC is trying to do, which I think, again, another big idea. But how do we create that? How do we create that? We all have this criteria that we're trying to meet it. So it doesn't matter how the kid gets there, or it doesn't matter how the teacher candidate gets there. No, but we need to meet those criteria. That's what matters. The other part is that I love the idea of you bringing up design, but the design thinking, ADST, we have to, in teacher education, really adopt that mindset of that iterative process, that this is about experiencing. This is about playing. This is about taking risks and learning from it. And yes, it's not going to be perfect. And so I think the real shift, and I think whether 10 years ago or for myself, 20, 25 years ago, I mean, I just think my mindset was, oh, I've done my classes. I should be able to teach. And,
yes.
I said, and the constant reminder I have to give out to my people is, and this is teacher candidates, coaching teachers, and practice evaluators, and my administrators, and our instructors. No, practicum is a learning experience. Mm-hmm. They are trying to transfer theory into practice. So do not expect because they've tipped that assessment course that they know how to assess students in your grade 2 class versus your physics 12 class, because that theory will look different in both those classes.
Of course, you know? Applied practice is so important. And something that you, like, to be really honest, something that changes by the culture of the community too. Like, I'm fortunate that I've only done 2 year stints, because after I left Canada after my first year, I had a student loan debt. I was like, I got to pay it. And then you sign 2 year contracts internationally. And so you get to actually go into all these different educational communities. And that's a real interesting thing, because not only is your practice based on what you're bringing in, but it's also shaped by the people that the constraints, I call them enabling constraints in some areas, of what's available to you. If you don't have the resources, or if you don't have the time in the schedule, or if you don't, the way that you did things in your previous school, or the way that you did things last year, isn't going to work now. You have a different set of students in front of you, for example. So now how do you keep doing that? And one of the things I wanted to touch on with you just before we leave is, how do you then make people feel okay? Because so you can fail a practicum. So this is something that's always been on my mind. You can fail a practicum, correct? And you can fail at teaching. Like, you could not get hired, or you can do a poor job at teaching. But how do you then get people and encourage people to feel safe enough to try new things and fail if what they could do is to be safe?
Yeah.
And that's always something that's been playing on my mind. I've always been the risk taker. So for instance, like, I knew that I probably, in my first practicum that we were discussing, I knew I should have probably just let go of it. But again, I couldn't do it.
And then I was like, you're provoking me, Sean, because I would have said to you, as one of the people who supported your learning in your practicum, I would have probably said to you, why is that provoking you? And to take that as the learning, why is that tapping your shoulder? Why was whatever that educator was doing would be worthwhile, not worthwhile in your practice? That actually, ironically, is maybe frustrating at the time.
Yes.
Was posing to you probably one of the best learning opportunities you had. The one that informed you the most about who you are as an educator. And it framed your thinking in terms of your guiding principles as you started moving forward into your practice. So if you were actually in classrooms, what worked out perfectly, air quotes, perfectly, then we couldn't hone in on that. Not to say that we should always be faced with the imperfect. I'm not saying that, or the misalignment, or disconnected, or whatever. But I think that's what I think is so fascinating, because here you are, you know, you're saying 10 years after your teacher ed, that still resonates with you. That's actually part of your why, like, which I think is fascinating. So I want you to take a step back at that and think, wow, that was actually probably the best thing that's ever happened in my teaching career.
And I'll say this, it also, like, it did ruffle my feathers a bit, because I had to then actually get like an advocacy there's different ways of teaching. There's different ways up a mountain. So I had to then advocate on my behalf and get somebody else to come advocate on my behalf to then do the practicum again. And then, because my whole thing was, because I failed the first practicum and I said, listen, if I fail again, then totally, I'll accept that. That'll be fine. I just want to be with somebody that's more on the facilitation side, because I've always been a great facilitator and I don't like, and that at that time, that was coming off as not being prepared. Oh, this went a little bit longer, this went a little bit shorter, or whatever. And really, my point was to try and engage the students as much as possible and meet them in an active way. And that was my North Star. And that wasn't everybody's North Star. Everybody's different. And so in my second practicum, I did see a lot of success, but that was because there was alignment on our North Star.
Is that? Yeah, totally. And it's interesting because I also think that systems, back to the your coaching teacher and the people who are supporting you otherwise, need to understand who the learner is too. So I think that's part of the work of teacher education programs to do that. You asked me how do we create that for our students to take risks?
Yeah.
We always have to be, I will say, nourishing and creating space for teacher candidates to build their efficacy in the practice. And not just teacher candidates, but also our coaching teachers, the ones who support them in the classroom, because they themselves are taking a risk in lots of ways, which is you got another adult in the room. You're responsible for educating them. Yeah. You got to disclose your thinking. So you have to be 100% vulnerable, 100% vulnerable.
Yeah, people are observing your lessons now, and that doesn't happen.
Observing your classrooms, they're walking into your classroom. So even though it's a fixed framework, because we're walking in there as guests, but they have to show you that, because typically as when you're in the practice and all these communities that we're trying to create within the program. And I love when teacher candidates say to me, what? We're alone when we're teaching? Yeah. So I think it's ironic, right? Because we've created so well, this community building and collective action and collaboration and communication and all those good things that, when you're standing there in front of 30 students, it's just you. So how do you create those communities to feel good about just being you in that classroom? Number one, creating space for that teacher candidate to do that, helping and supporting the coaching teacher as they're being vulnerable, because they're taking a lot of risks by having a teacher candidate. And then also the university, the person who's supporting them, I have to support them to let them know that it's okay. Okay. And you know what? The teacher candidates who are really struggling right now in our practicum are the ones who are too concerned with the show, too concerned about how they're doing ones who are connected to their students, creating these learning opportunities for their students, creating engagement for their students. Those teacher candidates and their supporting teachers are doing okay. It's the ones that are like, I have to put on the show. I didn't do this. I didn't do that. And I'm like, okay, but how did that connect to student learning? How did that connect to your students? That's the big thing. And the way I sort of diagnose that, I'm going to say this is my diagnosis, because I will tell you as we end this, because I really wanted to say this about teacher education, because it was an awakening coming back to teacher education, because you forget how difficult it is to become a teacher. We forget that teaching is a profession. It is complex. There's tons of things to know, and it'll be our lifetime to know a fraction of that. And honestly, the candidates who go through our program, and I've witnessed this, are in transformation. They're transforming from student to educator. And that is a huge paradigm shift. And again, the people who are struggling, not just worried about, oh, I didn't hand out this or whatever, I'm reenacting, I have no idea. But you can sense that vibe. They're all focused on themselves. And so what about the people, again, who you're serving? What's happening to them? And you know what? The problem is that they're still a student. Their mindset is still student. The ones who are, in my mind, meeting expectations in their current, and this is our short practicum, are who are meeting expectations because we frame it as taking risk, we frame it as being creative, we frame it, whatever. But what truth is, they're learning their identities as educators. Yeah. That's the short practicum. And as they're doing that, they're succeeding. It's the ones who still identify themselves as, I'm a student, I got to get this right, I got to pass the observation, if they're in that headspace, they're struggling. Back to the original of our beginning of our talk is the letting go. That's a human nature thing. They got to let go. This is not about the grade. It's not about the grade. Let that go.
Right? Yeah. I think that's a lot in a lot of professional programs too. Like I've spoken to a lot of people that have done medicine as well. And they said, but there's not really a way you can fail out of medical school. Like you would have to, once you're in there, it's pretty supportive. I mean, they're trying everything. They want you to succeed. And I think that's the same thing with teaching, is that once you're there and you've qualified and you're putting your best foot forward, I don't want to say that people don't fail, because lots of people do fail, but.
And I don't perceive fail as bad.
Yeah, no, me neither. No.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a career.
It's a career path. It's a choice to pursue a different career path, and maybe it's not the right career path for you.
Possibly, I say it's always a question back: is how important is this to you, and what are you willing to do to not compromising self, but what are you willing to do to get to where you want to be?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And interesting in that discussion was how much energy I had to put in to make sure that I was still going to graduate and then pass the practicum. And then, because then the expectation is that much higher, right? When you move on to the full practicum, the amount of pressure was much more, plus the amount of work that I had to do outside of that to just make it happen, because I knew I wanted to be an educator and I knew I wanted to make a difference. So mm-hmm. you're very right about our biggest failures end up being our biggest learning opportunities.
Yeah, biggest teacher. Absolutely.
Just a closing question. So how would you like people's lives to change as a result of your interaction at work, at home, or online?
So, you heard my purpose, which is to improve the learning experiences of students. Yes. And I've taken on different roles and continue to do that, which is fun to recognize what sort of my direction is. But honestly, what I'm really looking for, and I want this for my child too, in her learning experiences. And it sounds pretty cliche, but I really believe in this. I want people to be happy.
Yeah.
That's what I hope, so if they're going through practicum, and I love getting feedback emails. So I check in with them and all you hear is joy. Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Absolutely.
And so people had a great class, and I'm not saying that every step along the way is going to be easy. Mm-hmm. It shouldn't be, if we really are trying to create change or transform or learn, or learning is not necessarily easy. There is, I think that there's elements of struggle. I think it's important to have that there. But as they're doing it, they need to be happy. Where they're going, they need to be happy. And I always think that that's talking about self-check or checking in. If we're not feeling that way, if we're not presenting ourselves that way, then it's a question that we have to answer. So that's what I hope for. The trail I want to leave behind me. Happiness.
Cue, because I'm happy. I can say that genuinely, you're one of my favorite people to talk to about education. You are poignant. You do actually, you get down to the nitty gritty. During that whole time, you're giggling and laughing. And that's one of the reasons I really wanted to interview you today. So you do definitely bring that happiness to your discussion, no matter what that is.
What was my answer? Did I get it right? Did you like that?
Yeah. I know we're at the end. You missed the bubble. You were outside of the multiple choice bubble, and it didn't actually scan when I went to put it through the scanner.
Fair.
So I don't know if I can give that to you. If people want to engage with you and your work, where can they find you online?
So right now, publicly, they can find me on Twitter. I think that's my best modality in education, at Christine YH.
Perfect. Wonderful. Thank you so much for being on the podcast. And I really appreciate you helping us understand teacher education and the transformation that's happening in education.
Thank you. No, thanks for having me, Sean.
Hello, everyone. Sean again. I just wanted to take this time and say thank you. You have helped this podcast reach growth-minded humans on 5 continents, 26 countries, and 128 cities around the world. Without people like you listening and sharing, this would not be possible. If you have enjoyed this episode, would you consider leaving me a review on Apple Podcasts? These reviews really help me to reach more listeners and more guests. Life in today's world can be hectic. I hope you stay healthy, play more, work hard, love deeply, and as always, be bold, be kind, be you, be human. See you next week.